Thank you. Pleasure, Chuck. We have Chuck Gomes, the leader of the call from the Registry constituency, Olga Cavelli, nominating committee appointee, Adam Palmer, Registry constituency, James Bladell, Registrar, Steve Del Bianco, BC, Alan Greenberg, ALAC Rep. From staff, we have Liz Gaster and Patrick Jones. David Maher from the Registry constituency, Steve Metellus, IPC, and Geordie from the Registry constituency.
Paul Sahura joins the conference.
And Paul Sahura, now from Registrar.
I think this is Paul's first time. Welcome, Paul.
It is. Hello.
So, okay, well, welcome to everybody. And again, like I said, Tony Harrison told me he submitted his draft hypotheses for Area 5, but he indicated that he would probably be late, so we won't wait for him. Any questions on the agenda? Any comments on the agenda? It's pretty much continuing like we have done in the past. If not, then I didn't see any, I don't believe I saw any discussion on the list regarding the hypotheses that we worked through last week, which included the rest of Area 2, Area 3, and then all of Area 3 and Area 4. Any comments on those, or can we consider those closed for now? All right. Then we will move ahead to Area 5. Tony Harris submitted some hypotheses there. So let's take a look at those in the wiki. And here we go. That worked. Okay. I don't know how that happened. I was logged on to that part of the wiki separate from the agenda, and it disappeared on me. So I will bring it up again. Bear with
Chuck, this is Steve Metalich.
Go ahead, Steve.
When did Tony send this in? Because I don't think I received anything.
You know what?
Or else if I
didn't look very closely, Steve, because he sent it to me and asked me for some feedback. I thought he had sent it to the whole list, but I didn't really check that. He asked me to put it in the wiki, so it's in the wiki. Okay, so if you're online in the wiki, if somebody can't get online with the wiki, I can
never been able to
that.
Find anything in the wiki, but I'll give it another try.
Okay, I'll see if I can help you on that. I'm not as good with the wiki as Aubrey is, so probably part of that is that she would do a lot of things in it.
It's actually not that easy to edit in the wiki, I have to say.
You know, it's not. I agree. And it certainly isn't easy for me, but I think I got it all in there, so.
Yeah, and Aubrey is the master, I agree.
I'm sure there may be better wikis that are available, but it does serve a purpose. So, all right, I got the table back up for me, and we'll start with Area 5. Now, what I tried to do, even in the others that submitted things, I included some of the old hypotheses, so you don't have to look multiple places. Now, Steve Metalich, are you in the wiki?
I am.
Okay, and
I'm
you're
on
in.
The...
And you see the agenda towards the beginning there, right, for the 29th?
Yes.
And if you'll scroll way down to the table, you have to go through all the old agendas and everything. You get down to the, I think, where it says meeting notes or something. And you'll see the table, and we're going to go to Area 5.
I see several meeting notes, but...
Yeah. No table?
No.
No.
Why is it the bottom?
Pardon me?
It's right at the bottom, Steve.
I see projects.
Well, mine begins with meeting note, where it says meeting notes. The table starts right after that. Meeting notes in bold. You don't see that, huh?
Meeting notes, 8 July 2008?
8 July, and it says, just says meeting notes.
Yeah, beyond that, Steve, beyond 8 July. Keep going down.
I don't see meeting notes in...
So what do you have after 8 July? You should have notes and...
A lot of text.
A bunch of text, so keep going down. What's at the very end of the text that you...
Then add projects. Add projects here. Then I have my one contribution to this, which was made on July 5th.
Actually, I see the table above some meeting notes for 8 July. I'm not sure what's...
I show it below the 8 July... Meeting notes.
Why would
now I see a table above meeting notes.
Yeah.
Scroll up to Area 5.
Area 5.
I do see some things that say Tony, so I think I'm there.
You're there.
You're there, right.
Okay,
right.
Good. Okay,
sorry about that.
Yeah, this is one of the awkward things, and probably if I was better at it, I could organize it better. But anyway, let's go with Area 5. Now, for Area 5... First is study 6, and then possibly combine with that GAC recommendation 1, and if we go to just what, let me quickly go through the for that area. Study 6 was submitted by scroll down, went right by it. Okay. Study 6 was submitted by Milton Mueller, and study whether more restrictive WHOIS data policies lead to more crime and abuse by comparing crime abuse levels on a percentage basis across two or more CCTLDs with different and or more restrictive WHOIS. Now, if you look at the in the table there, let's skip over Tony's for a moment. What I included there so that you could see it all in one place. So the original hypothesis stated by Milton was CCTLDs that shield some WHOIS data of natural persons produce no appreciable differences in the levels of cybercrime in the domain and do not impair enforcement efforts. And then I had, and actually I think that's not a badly worded hypothesis right there. And I had included what I had put in there too. I actually broke it down into two. More restrictive WHOIS display requirements will lead to more crime and abuse. And B, use of proxy or privacy registration services limits legitimate use of GTLD WHOIS data. And then what Tony submitted is at the beginning there. For six, he said the concealment of WHOIS registrant data that is not publicly displayed in some CCTLDs has no effect on domain cybercrime activity levels and the resulting law enforcement actions. And then for DAC 1, he said the legitimate use of GTLD WHOIS data is curtailed or prevented by the use of proxy and privacy registration services. So let me open it up for discussion.
This is Steve Metallic.
Go ahead, Steve.
My concern with both your formulation and Milton's formulation for six is with it implies causation. He said CCTLDs that shield some WHOIS data produce no appreciable differences. And you say concealment of WHOIS registration data has no effect. I think you're assuming there's a cause and effect relationship there, which I would question whether WHOIS policy is going to be the main issue in whether or not there's a lot of crime and abuse.
But isn't that what the hypothesis was?
But you're assuming that if you associate a level of crime and abuse with a WHOIS policy, that there's a cause and effect relationship. What's the basis for assuming that?
I'm not sure I'm following you.
Let me give you an example.
Okay.
If you say there's less phishing in dot VI is a CCTLD than there is in .com, and I see that .vi, let's assume, has more restrictive WHOIS access policies than .com. I'm assuming it does. Therefore, the concealment of WHOIS registrant data has no effect on cybercrime activity levels in .vi. But the fact is, nobody would waste their time setting up a phishing site in .vi and trying to encourage people to come there thinking that they're really coming to a bank site. You know, they wouldn't put bankofamerica.vi or paypal.vi. They do that in .com because that's where people can be deceived into thinking that they're, you know, going to a legitimate site. That's
okay.
Nothing to do with WHOIS.
I follow you on that, Steve, but isn't it... In the proposed study, isn't the proposed study, whether it's right or not, and whether there is causation or not, I understand that part.
Can't, with that study, we cannot get to the causation. I agree with Steve. It's Paul speaking. You know, crime could be completely due to something else totally outside of WHOIS. Well, I don't see why this study will determine what the cause is.
Hey,
it's
by the way...
I
agree
with fish when it's not correct.
I agree with that, but my interpretation of Milton's proposal is that that's what he was suggesting.
Yes, I think that's right, and that's why those of us who actually examined these proposals in the earlier group concluded that this was one that should not be pursued. But if we're going to create hypotheses, even for ones that we don't think should be pursued, this just assumes that there is a causal relationship.
Yeah, and I understand that. So I'm not disagreeing with you on that. Obviously, what I was trying to do and what I did was to capture what I thought his intent was, whether that's something we should pursue or not, as you know, is a different question. So let's see. Let's talk about how we might be able to modify that to
Sure. This is David.
Go ahead, David.
Perhaps the question should be whether the hypothesis is that there is a causal relationship or there is not a causal relationship.
So how would you word that? You're suggesting a hypothesis with regard to the causal relationship?
Yeah.
Okay.
I agree with Steve that the hypothesis we're currently talking about assumes that there is a causal relationship, but in my mind, there's a question whether or not there is one.
Okay. So take a stab at wording on that, David. As a hypothesis.
I very simply, concealment of who is registrant data that is not publicly displayed has a causal relationship to cybercrime activity levels.
Steve, what do you think of that?
Well, I'm not sure how you would study that.
I understand that. All we really need to do here is do the hypothesis. Now, if we find at the council level that it's, you know, really doesn't make any sense to, there's no way of studying that, or when we ask staff to analyze it a little bit, we can deal with that. But for right now, let's try and formulate a hypothesis that appropriately addresses the proposed study.
It's not easy because the hypothesis you come up with kind of sounds silly. But so it would be something like, you know, more displaying of more who is causes cybercrime. Displaying of less who is causes less cybercrime.
Yeah, either way works for a hypothesis because the testing would be the same.
Steve Galbiant, can I make a comment on this?
Sure. Go ahead, Steve.
I share the comments earlier that this is a sort of a nuisance study suggestion, and it's done for clever purposes more than for true discovery. But having said that, the way Milton wrote it up, he tried to avoid implying causation and talked about statistically significant correlation. So one potential way to phrase the hypothesis is there is a statistically significant correlation between the restrictiveness of CCDLD, who is policies, and the level of abuse in the domain name. By saying statistically significant, you're not even implying cause and effect. You're just asking a statistician to determine that of all the variables that correlate with the level of abuse, that he thinks that who is data policy would have a high statistical significance.
How do people feel about that approach?
I think it's laughable, too.
It's all laughable, but if we imply cause and effect in the way we state the hypothesis, we are open to criticism for having twisted what was already a twisted hypothesis to begin with.
I hear what you're saying, but it's like we could have a TLD out there that's totally open to who is, and there's absolutely no cybercrime in it because there might be one name in it. That doesn't mean anything. Are we trying to get to the truth, or are we trying to, like, imply that, you know, a lot of who is causes crime and less who is doesn't? Let's just ask the question. Make that the hypothesis. I agree with David.
So this is Liz. It sounds like the two options are either to Paul and David would be something like public display of who is causes cybercrime, and for Steve DelBianco, there is a statistically significant correlation between the public display of who is and cybercrime.
Right.
How are those different?
Statistical significance implies nothing about cause and effect. It's a simple regression analysis, and if you get a high T score, you would say that there's X percent chance that there's a relationship between the two. That's all.
Okay.
It's something they will run with as a statistician.
No, I understand that.
And the results
would
be meaningless, frankly.
Yeah.
I agree. It's just like saying, you know, there's a higher proportion of black people in prisons in the United States. Does that mean black people are causing all the crime? Or, you know, more black people cause crime than white people? No.
Again, one of the things we have to be careful of is to whether we agree with a study being done or not, or whether it even can be done effectively. Our goal in this group is to create well-defined, brief hypotheses that could be tested if we so decided.
Go ahead. I agree with that.
So what we need to do here is to formulate a hypothesis that we can put forward to the council for this study. It'll be the council's responsibility in working with the various constituencies to decide whether it should be sued or whether it is even feasible.
Well, is this one where we might want to go back to Milton real quick and say...
Let him choose from the two. He'll pick the correlation one.
That would be... Is anybody opposed to that?
If you go back to what he submitted on January 17th, and when he's asked how the hypothesis could be falsified, he had the hypothesis the other way, that CCTLDs that shield sub-WHOIS data produce no appreciable difference in levels of cybercrime. He has produced, but he says how the hypothesis could be falsified. If you found a statistically significant correlation between more restrictive CCTLD WHOIS policies and levels of abuse in a domain, then the null hypothesis would be falsified.
So it sounds like that's the one to go with. And with the caveat that many of you, you know, won't support it.
And that's okay. This may not be a study we want to move forward with, but that's not this group's task.
And I would add this, this is Steve, that even if a statistically significant correlation came back, it implies nothing about cause and effect, and would therefore not even inform policymaking at ICANN. It's sort of a throwaway, even if you did it.
So let's go back to that one, Steve Metallis, from Milton himself. Would you read that again?
Let's see. You found a statistically significant correlation between more restrictive CCTLD WHOIS policies and levels of abuse in a domain, then the null hypothesis would be falsified.
So that's pretty similar to what Steve DelBianco said, is that right?
Yeah, I think you would say, to put it as a hypothesis, you would say there is or is not, a statistically significant correlation between more restrictive CCTLD WHOIS policies and levels of abuse in a domain, in a registry.
And I think that sounds like it captures what Milton was intending. Now, please, even if you disagree that it's a fruitful study or anything else, does that capture the proposed study? Anybody disagree with that?
Steve, just make sure I've got it. If I say there is a statistically significant correlation between more restrictive CCTLD WHOIS policies and cybercrime.
And levels of abuse or levels of cybercrime in a domain.
Thanks.
Anybody have a problem with that wording for the hypothesis?
It won't tell us anything.
That's fine. Okay.
I hear you, but it's kind of like, you know, it's going to be used to imply that, you know, if it comes out one way or the other way, either one side is going to use it to imply something or the other side is going to use it to imply something.
I understand.
Which doesn't help us.
That's my problem with it.
I understand that, and that decision though is going to be made in the next step in this process or the following that. So
I hear what you're saying, but that's the problem with it.
Paul, let me ask you a question.
That's the problem I thought we were trying to evolve to avoid.
What is that?
No.
What problem are we trying to avoid?
Use these studies to draw false conclusions.
We do want to avoid that, but it's not the task of this working group to make that decision. The task of this working group is to form brief, clear hypotheses that will facilitate making decisions whether we proceed with any studies or not. So, all right, Liz, you have that then?
Yes, I do.
Any other comments on that? Now, let's, in terms of GAC study 1, I had kind of lumped it in with this one, and maybe that should be done or maybe not. We shouldn't assume that it should be. The GAC recommendation 1 was, to what extent are the legitimate uses of GTLD WHOIS data curtailed or prevented by use of proxy or privacy registration services? Now, it really is a little bit different. As I look at it again, what are your thoughts on that? Should that be treated separately or combined with 6?
I think that should be separate. I thought, don't we have other proxy and privacy services hypotheses?
Yeah, that's for sure. So we should treat GAC recommendation 1 separate. So if we do that, now what Tony said there was that for one, the legitimate use of GTLD WHOIS data is curtailed or prevented by the use of proxy and privacy registration services.
This seems to go more with the next one, doesn't it, which deals with proxy and private registration.
Yeah, it may be, so I think I was... I am uncomfortable with where I placed it as well right now, so I think you're right. Just jumping ahead to study 13, where he said proxy and concealed WHOIS records complicate investigation and notice. It does go with it, but it's maybe a subtly different anyway. So we won't combine GAC 1 with 6, unless somebody disagrees with that. So I think we're done with 6 for now, okay? Let's go. We'll keep GAC 1 in our back pocket here and decide what to do with that. Let's go to study 13, the original hypothesis was proxy and private WHOIS records make the investigation and takedown of phishing sites difficult for a number of reasons. If the phishing site is hosted on a legitimate domain, for example, because the domain's web server was hacked by the phisher, it can be difficult to contact the owner of the domain to help him or her rectify the problem. Number 2, the contact information in the WHOIS record is often beneficial for disabling domains that were registered specifically for phishing. This is because the person in the contact information often knows nothing about the domain. When that contact information is hidden behind proxy and private WHOIS records, proving that the owner of the domain knows nothing about the domain is more difficult. Both of these scenarios lengthen the time it takes to disable phish sites once they have been discovered. Now, obviously, that's a lot more than just a hypothesis, but that was what was provided. I had simplified it to 2 things. Phishing websites tend to be hosted on private proxy domains, and B, domain names registered using proxy or privacy services are more apt to be associated with fraud or other legal activity than domain names not using such services. And then Tony, for study 13, had said proxy and concealed WHOIS records complicate investigation and notice and takedown procedures involving voluntary and involuntary infringers by setting up an intermediary holder of this data, which is urgently needed in order to disable cybercrime activities. let's leave GAC 11 alone for now, and let's talk about 13, study 13. Comments?
This is Steve Metallitz. It might be a little simpler just to say, just looking at the original here, proxy and concealed who-is records complicate the investigation and remediation of phishing sites.
That sounds pretty good to me. What do others think?
I like what you said, Chuck, splitting it into the two things you said. That gets to the nut of it, in my opinion, more. Because what Steve just said, we'd have to have another one that talked about the benefits of proxy whois. Why are people, small businesses, whatever, choosing proxy whois services? So we'd have to have something that was on that side, too.
Other comments? And again, we want to try and make sure we're capturing what the original proposer of the study was trying to propose there. So what was they're not mutually exclusive in terms of what Steve said and what I said, just different wording, I think, and what Tony said too. His was kind of similar to what Steve did.
Yeah, I was just trying to kind of simplify what Tony had.
Yeah, right. So, Paul, you're saying that you prefer the two that I listed under mine down below in contrast to what Tony and Steve have said. Is there any way of combining those to capture the same thing, or are they pretty similar?
I'm just saying if there's let's say the hypothesis proves that there's some negative benefit for proxy whois. That doesn't mean we should get rid of proxy whois, because there might be something else that has a greater positive benefit. But yet we don't have a study that shows that. So that's what I'm saying. We should, find out how many phishing sites use proxy whois. You know, the hypothesis could be there every proxy whois is a phishing site. Or a hypothesis could be, less than 0.01% of proxy registrations are phished sites. Figure that out. Let's see. Are there a lot of proxy whois used that are involved in phishing, or is it hardly any? It might be true that for less than, 0.01%, those are harder to take down because of proxy. But should we throw out the whole baby with the bathwater because of this phishing issue? That's my, why don't we study that?
Okay. Steve, did you start to say something, too?
Well, again, I'm just going back to look at what the APWG submitted. They're the source of this.
Right.
And they say I'm just looking in their topic. One of their topics is we would like to determine whether a proxy or private registration negatively impacts the time required to get a phishing site disabled. That, I think, is pretty close to what Tony had and what I tried to simplify. In fact, you could even just put it that way, whether a proxy or private registration negatively impacts the time required to get a phishing site disabled. Maybe that's the simplest way to put it. Then they also say, we would like to see a study on the use of proxy and private registrations, whether or not the occurrence of these types of registrations is increasing, and how much the domains registered using proxy or private registrations are used for phishing. That's kind of closer to, I think, what Paul's talking about, which would be the hypothesis that, you could do it either way. Proxy registrations are never used for phishing, and then you would disprove that, and you would show that, what the percentage is.
And
say they're always used for phishing. You would disprove that, and you'd show what the percentage is.
And in fact, there could be three different hypotheses in this one as I'm listening here. Certainly, I think you're right that what Tony captured there is a separate hypothesis.
Yeah. It doesn't get to the proportions. It just says when there is a phishing site associated with a proxy registration, it has a certain consequence.
And the second hypothesis I put seems to be in there, that domain names registered using proxy or private systems are more apt to be associated with fraud or other legal activity than domain names not using such services.
I agree with it. What Steve just said, if we added another study that said that compared the time it took for a non-proxy registration to find that Fisher guy, how much more time is a proxy registration adding to finding the Fisher guy?
I think wouldn't that come out of the study that as Tony and Steve have described?
Not exactly, because they said it just takes longer. Is it 2 seconds longer? Is it 10 days longer? My guess is that it's very difficult to find these Fisher guys, and in both cases, it's nearly infinite time.
Well, you could
In both cases, I would guess whether it's proxy or not proxy, the time that it takes to find the Fisher guy is a very long time. So saying that proxy registrations is a very long time doesn't help us much.
So we can fix that with wording, though.
Whether it's a longer time. It doesn't tell you whether it's...
Or a significantly longer time.
Significantly longer.
Unreasonably complicate,
Yeah, all you got to do is find the time it takes to find these fishers in both cases and compare them. And see, is one 5 days longer, 5 minutes longer? Are both of them 2 years? So 5 minutes longer or 5 days longer, does it matter? That's my question.
Okay, so let's take one of these at a time. Let's start with what Tony had there that covers one aspect of what the anti-phishing working group submitted, and let's see if we can get comfortable with the wording on that. So, Steve, you had suggested simplifying it to proxy and concealed whois records, complicated investigation, notice and takedown. I think you changed it a little bit.
But I said, see if this captures it, proxy and concealed whois records complicate the investigation and disabling of phishing sites.
And what if we were to put to cover Paul's concern, unreasonably complicate?
Or significantly.
Something to show that
it's not just a 2 second difference.
Yeah, right. So what would that say, Liz?
It would say proxy and conceal whois records significantly complicate the investigation and disabling of phishing sites.
Any problems with that? That's one hypothesis. This is one I think we're going to have two or three.
Unfortunately, it doesn't compare to non-proxy registrations.
Don't you have to do that?
I don't know what else it could mean. You could throw in there compared to instances that don't have concealed or proxy.
I'm good with that. So therefore, we would look into phishing instances that don't have proxy, find out how complicated that is, and compare it to this.
Yeah, I think to test the hypothesis, you have to do that. But that's, again, that's kind of a step down the road. You can't really test whether or not there's going to be a significant complication of the proxy and concealed whois records if you don't compare it to those that aren't.
So what I wrote, see if this works, sort of the belt and suspenders, is proxy and concealed whois records significantly complicate the investigation and disabling of phishing sites as compared with non-proxy registrations.
Does that cover it? Paul?
That does for me.
Okay. Anybody else have any suggestions on that one? Okay. So now, what's our second hypothesis then? Because they really do have several things built into this. So,
Going back to what they submitted, it said, we would like to see a study on the use of proxy or private registrations, whether or not the occurrence of these types of registrations is increasing, and how much the domains registered using proxy or private registrations are used for phishing. So I think it's that last one is really what...
I agree with both of those. Let's find a study. See, is the number of proxy registrations increasing? By what rate? That's good information.
So that's a separate hypothesis,
kind of
right.
Right. And then number two would be, how many of these proxy registrations are used in phishing? Out of all the proxy registrations, we know the number. We know how fast it's increasing. Out of all those, how many of those are used in phishing?
And then how
so if we started with the number of proxy registrations is significantly increasing, period.
That's I think that's one of their hypotheses, right?
Right.
Yeah.
Okay. And then a third one, we need a third one dealing with the fishing issue. Now,
Paul,
the way you worded it wasn't really stated as a hypothesis, but I understand where you're going. So let's see if we can word it like a hypothesis.
Well, hang on 1 second. Back to the first one. It's kind of a little bit, we need to compare it to the total number of registrations, because the total number of registrations is increasing. So we should say the number of proxy registrations is increasing faster than the total number of registrations is increasing. Something like that, so that we don't give a misleading, another misleading.
So, Paul, how about this? The number of proxy registrations is significantly increasing as compared with the total number of registrations.
Makes sense to me.
Or when compared with.
Yeah.
Yeah, there are different ways to do it, but I think that captures, anybody disagree, that I think that captures that particular point. So that gives us two hypotheses so far, including how we modified Tony's. And now we need the third one with regard to fishing. Suggestions on that?
Well, I think one way you could do it, and I'm sure Paul will want to unpack this, is to say that domains registered using proxy or private services are disproportionately associated with fishing. That's the hypothesis.
How do you feel about that? Anybody?
My hypothesis would be a very small number of domains that have proxy registrations are used in phishing.
That's not the same point. The point is
you compare
what percentage of proxy registered domains is involved, and then you compare that with what percentage of non-proxy registered domains is involved. And if you find that the first number is higher than the second number, then you can say that proxy registrations are disproportionately associated with phishing activity. Then your hypothesis is wrong.
I agree with that. I would make two statements then. A very small number of domains that are on proxy registrations, I would say an exact number. 2% of the domains on proxy registration are fished. 2% of... And then I would compare that to non-proxy. 2% of the non-proxy domains are fished.
In that case, you would say they're not disproportionately associated, and the hypothesis falls. But if it turns out that it's 2% of the proxy and 0.2% of the non-proxy, then you would say that the hypothesis is proven.
I agree with that.
So this was what I had, and it may need to be inverted based on what you just said, is domain names registered using proxy or privacy services are disproportionately associated with fishing.
That's what I would suggest.
And Paul, I'm still not following you. Why that's not a well-stated hypothesis that could be tested? Seems like that accomplishes what you're getting at as well.
Do you want me to say it again, Paul?
Yes, I do.
Domain names registered using proxy or privacy services are disproportionately associated with phishing.
Is that okay?
I'm thinking.
Okay. I'm glad.
Disproportionately, I would say, twice as much or whatever, to define disproportionately, and I would add as compared to those that do not have proxy registration.
The problem with getting specific with regard to numbers like ordinal numbers or whatever, twice as much or 2% or anything like that, I think you overly restrict the study.
I'm totally good with that, but then we need to know the exact proportion on both sides, and then let that go out.
Well, I did add that clause now, like we did in the other. So, see, let me read it again. Domain names registered using proxy or privacy services are disproportionately associated with phishing as compared with non-proxy registration.
Does that work?
I just said through saying that to me. I would put both sides on it. How many on the proxy registration site are associated with phishing, and how many on the non-proxy registration site are associated with phishing, both compared to the total number on that side.
But you're designing the study, not stating a hypothesis. And that's not our task. I agree with you, that's a way to do that. But it's not our job to design the study, and that's why I'm bothered by getting too specific, like saying 2% or saying twice as much or something like that. What we want them to do if we decide to do this study is to go out and find out whether what the comparison is and see whether that's significant, whether it's disproportionate or whatever. But it's not our job to design the study. Anybody else opposed to the wording that Liz had? And Liz, why don't you read it one more time?
Sure. Domain names registered using proxy or privacy services are disproportionately associated with phishing as compared with non-proxy registration.
Any other tweaks to that? Okay. Your concerns noted, Paul. Let's then look at GAC 11, which, if we go back to the GAC statement itself,
I think that about covers GAC 11.
I think you're right, but let me just go back just so that everybody focuses, in case they're not looking at it. GAC 11 was, what is the percentage of domain names registered using proxy or privacy services that have been associated with fraud or other illegal activity versus the percentage of domain names not using such services that have been associated with fraud or illegal activity? I think you're exactly right. Does anybody disagree with that? That one's really covered.
Not really, because it just talks about phishing. There's all the kind of fraud and illegal activity.
Oh,
like
gotcha.
Spamming is illegal,
yeah.
For example. We don't talk about spamming at all. You know? What? And I would change the hypothesis to, instead of, I didn't know that's what they were going after, instead of saying phishing, just say fraud and illegal activity.
Anybody have a problem with that?
Well, you know, it's going to make it harder to design the study because you first have to figure out.
I hear what you're saying, but you just got through saying that. We're not doing the design. We're doing a hypothesis.
Well, maybe there's two separate hypotheses here. One is the one based on 13 that we've approved, and the other is the one based on GAC 11 in which we substitute fraud or other illegal activity for phishing.
So I have two separate hypotheses, one that is more general, fraud and illegal activity, and one that specifically says phishing. Is that what you're saying?
Yes. I agree with Paul. That's the difference between the
two. So we have a fourth hypothesis that addresses GAC 11.
That's exactly like the previous one.
Yeah.
Except it says...
Got it. Yeah. You got it, Liz?
So it would say domain name is registered using proxy or privacy services are disproportionately associated with cybercrime as compared with...
fraud or other illegal activity is what the GAC said.
It says, sorry, what...
fraud or other illegal activity.
Thank you.
Any comments on that? And Liz, for these two, would you read back the four hypotheses that we have, please?
Yeah, just give me one sec.
Sure. We'll always give you the one sec.
Okay, sorry. So we have four. 13A, the number of proxy registrations is significantly increasing when compared with the total number of registrations. B, proxy and concealed HOIS records significantly complicate the investigation and disabling of phishing sites as compared with non-proxy registrations. C, domain names registered using proxy or privacy services are disproportionately associated with fraud and other illegal activities as compared with non-proxy registrations. And GAC 11, or D, would be domain names registered using proxy or privacy services are disproportionately associated with phishing.
Read that last.
C is going to be domain names registered using proxy or privacy services are disproportionately associated with phishing as compared with non-proxy registrations. And then GAC 11 is domain names registered using proxy or privacy services are disproportionately associated with fraud and other illegal activities as compared with non-proxy registration.
Excuse me, can you read the second one again?
Yeah, hang on one sec. Let me fix what I did. Okay. The second one is proxy and concealed WHOIS records significantly complicate the investigation and disabling of phishing sites as compared with non-proxy registration.
Joy, any further comments or discussion?
I need to look at them, and unfortunately, I'm not at my computer.
Yeah. Okay. And Paul, what our practice is each time is that after the meeting, Liz will prepare a red line write up, and then also post them on the final ones on the wiki, and then everyone's encouraged to discuss on the list and submit any comments, suggested edits, and so forth. And then we'll take a brief amount of time in our meeting next week to, as one final shot, just like we did today, so that we can make any final edits at that time. Is that okay?
Makes sense to me. Does this meeting start at 8 or 7 Pacific time? In other words, was I an hour late?
No, you were on time.
Oh, okay.
Yeah, you were right on time. It starts at 11 a.m. Eastern,
okay.
So for you and I, it starts at 8. Yeah.
Thank you.
Okay. All right. Then going to GAC 2, and if we go back to GAC 2, it said, what is the economic impact of restrictions on some or all of the legitimate uses of WHOIS? Sounds awfully familiar to things we've already talked about. What Tony suggested there, and the GAC didn't state a hypothesis, as everyone knows, restrictions on some or all of the legitimate uses of WHOIS have an economic impact. And let me remind everybody of the staff note that Liz put in there when she wrote up the original report on the proposed studies. She said this is relevant to the previously listed study submissions because access to WHOIS data is one of the legitimate uses we would like to protect, but there may be other legitimate uses not mentioned by previous proposals. Comments or discussions on this?
It's a tough one. I mean,
yeah, it is.
You could talk for like 2 days on this one.
Yeah. Well, let's talk about what Tony suggested. First of all, restrictions on some or all of the legitimate uses of WHOIS have an economic impact.
This is Steve. I think that is responsive to what the GAC said. I think obviously there's problems with it, but I think it accurately translates what they said into hypothesis speak.
And that's what our task is. So
it's tricky because you have to talk about what's the WHOIS. Is it the WHOIS? Is the information behind proxy, or is it what's shown in the WHOIS output? So none of what's shown in the WHOIS output, as far as I know, is restricted. It's always been accessible via port 43. Still is. So you have to get to what's the WHOIS information. What's shown in the WHOIS output or something other than that?
I follow you there, Paul, but I think that the GAC is probably looking to the future. If we were to restrict what's displayed in WHOIS, in other words, the WHOIS requirements that ICANN imposes, it might have an economic impact.
It's too hard. Yeah, I hear what you're saying, but we can't test what hasn't happened in the future. I mean, we can't test the future. So,
well, I mean, I assume that if you were to...
Therefore, I assume they're talking about the past, which means proxy, in my mind. But I could be wrong on that.
Yeah, I don't know whether they're talking about proxy or not here. But we've covered some of what they're getting at. It's been covered in some other areas. Like, for example, Milton's thing on CCTLDs was along the same line. If they're more restrictive and so forth. Now, what we can conclude from that, obviously, is questionable, but I think it's the thinking similar. Recommendations on how to handle this one. not real clear. Should we just go with what Tony has, and then it needs to be decided whether or not, I mean, it's a tough one to actually do a study, I think, if we were going down that path. But if, in fact, what Tony's written captures what we think they're getting at, maybe that's what we should go with.
What did Tony write?
Restrictions on some or all of the legitimate uses of WHOIS have an economic impact. Does that capture what the GAC's getting at?
I got to see them both in front of me. Otherwise, I'm just going to ask you to keep repeating them.
Okay.
The way
all right.
And unfortunately, I have to leave the call. So can I look at this online and, you know, reply on the list?
Absolutely.
Does it make it clearer, just in general, as a hypothesis, to say have a negative economic impact?
That's probably a good idea. Yeah, and Paul, I already told you the procedure we're going to follow. So if you
it all depends on what the restriction is and so on.
So you're suggesting it could be a positive economic impact?
Who knows? I don't. Yeah.
Yeah. Okay. So
okay, I have to go. Sorry.
All right. Thanks, Paul. What do the rest of you think in terms of should we add the word negative impact or just leave it as is? No thoughts. This is a tough one. I know.
I don't think it's much of a hypothesis without one, yeah. Without the qualifier.
Everybody okay with adding negative?
Yeah.
Okay. And again, whether we go negative or positive or anything like that, when you're testing a hypothesis, you got to look at both sides or all sides. So. Okay. All right. So that one, you got that one now?
Yes, I do.
Okay, good. Let's go on to Area 6. And Steve Del Bianco provided some hypotheses. What I did, Steve, thanks for putting yours right in the wiki. I went ahead and cut in the previous hypothesis so people could see that all on the same page without jumping around as much. So,
and I had done that in the attached Word doc.
You did. That's why it made it very easy to include it here, too. And we hadn't followed that procedure in the past. But when I was helping Tony with his, I said, you know, it'd be really nice to have it all in one place when we're going through this meeting. So I just went ahead and copied and pasted the previous as well. No, your document was very well done and easy to use.
And before we jump into that, I wanted to Steve Metalis is the author of one of the submissions, and I think Steve's on a tight clock today, so he might be the one who goes first.
You want to jump first? Jump to his comment one? Is that good, Steve Metalis?
Yeah, that'd be fine, and that's the one down there between 3 and 20. I don't know how I got enshrined forever.
Important, Steve.
Yeah,
it
must be.
Steve, why don't you go ahead and talk to that one?
Okay, but I think what Steve has there, actually, I think, to be honest, I think he probably cribbed this from what Liz did when she was, because I think at one point she prepared a draft hypothesis, and I think this just breaks it out into two separate, and I agree they are separate hypotheses.
Can I make a question?
I apologize. Let me back up here a second. The issue here was whether if a registrant used a proxy service, they would have a lesser ability to contest a UDRP proceeding. And so that's the second hypothesis that Steve has listed there.
The first hypothesis was taken from the way you submitted the study, because you described in there that the way you would conduct it was to ask UDRP providers like WIPO and NAF to identify cases that involve proxy and private registration and to indicate whether the registrar performed, whether they actually revealed the identity information for the registrant as part of the UDRP case.
Yeah, and that would be one way that you would have the registrant would not even know that the UDRP was going on. So I guess you've broken this down into two steps, but I think it accurately captures the comment, the suggestion.
And I don't want to be too duplicative of study area 3, the one I had submitted. And I'm not familiar with UDRP proceedings, but in a UDRP,
yeah.
Yeah, it's a different authority that's making the request of the registrar to reveal the proxy data, right? It's not the same thing as an IP holder independently providing evidence of actionable harm.
That's correct. It doesn't turn on evidence of actionable harm here, really. It just says that a UDRP case has been brought.
Well, then I think we've got to...
commenting on the merits of it.
Right, so we've got to keep number one because it's completely distinct from whether or not they're honoring their RAA on evidence of actionable harm, as in Area 6, number 3.
Yeah, I mean, this is one of the topics that I know the compliance activities are looking at right now.
Now, we may have to tweak number one just a little bit, and let me tell you where I'm coming from there. And those of you that have been involved in many of the WHOIS working groups will probably be better qualified to do it, because when we say actual registrant, what do we mean by that? I think I know exactly what we mean by it, but I think we have to express it here, because officially, in some proxy services, the proxy provider is the actual registrant. Okay.
So do you want to say?
I don't think that's what we mean.
Like accurate? Is that the point?
Oh no, it's the licensee, according to 3.773 in the RAA. I'm talking about the licensee.
So should we say that here?
Well, the problem is that some proxy services operate that way, and some proxy services operate it another way. So, I mean, you're right. Actual registrant is kind of shorthand. It's for it's really the party who
pays the bill, right?
Party whose interest is at stake in the UDRP proceeding. Party who's at risk of losing their domain name.
Would it work just to put actual registrant in some quotes? Just to
that'd be okay with me.
Is true registrant a better expression?
Well, the problem with the term registrant, I think that's the problem, is that registrant has a very specific meaning from a registry point of view, and I know that's not what we mean in some cases, depending on how the proxy or privacy service is operated.
User?
So
is it
the user? The user of the domain name is what we're really talking about, right? I'm not sure that term works, but...
Yeah.
So let me ask you, some of the lawyers on the call, in the RAA 3773, the expression registered name holder is used, and is that the proxy's fee, or is that the
actual? That's the registrant.
All right.
I'm not an attorney, but that's the
registrant. You can either put actual registrant in quotes, or you could say, not revealing contact data of the actual user of the domain name. Or
I kind of like that one. I think it's... but I can live with the quotes, too. What do others think?
I've got them both now. The actual registrant quotes or user of the domain name.
Chuck, this is James.
So you're suggesting an or there, Liz?
Yeah.
Or you had them as two separate things. Go ahead, James.
That just a suggestion that the subscriber or customer of the proxy service in lieu of any mention of actual registrant. In some cases, the UDRP or the proxy service is the actual registrant, is a legal registrant of record.
What do you think about that? That's not as bad. So you're saying the subscriber of the proxy service or the... say that again, please, James.
Okay. The actual registrant or subscriber of the proxy service.
Does that work? Thomas?
Maybe we should say proxy/private service, and we should probably say some registrars operating proxy/private service registration services, and so you could say the customer of the proxy/private registration service.
That works, doesn't it, James?
Yeah.
So let's see what Liz has now. Giving her a chance to get it down.
Yeah, so what I've got is some registrars operating proxy services are not revealing the, quote, actual registrant, unquote, or subscriber of the proxy/privacy service when requested in a UDRP proceeding.
Well, I think we want to change proxy in the first use to proxy/private services. So some registrars operating proxy/private registration services are not revealing data on the customer of the proxy/private registration service when requested in a UDRP proceeding.
So we have proxy/privacy twice, which is good. It's precise. Okay?
Yes, I got it.
The actual registrant phrase, which I agree is maybe, although I think we all understand what that means.
Yeah.
Maybe miss, you know.
Yeah, yeah. And it does pay off sometimes to be pretty precise in some of these things down the road when other people are looking at it. Okay, on number one. Okay, let's go to number two. A registrant's use of a proxy private, we did it there, huh? A registration service reduces the registrant's ability to contest a UDRP proceeding. Any comments on that?
I think that's fine as long as we don't get into a quibble about whether that person is a, quote, registrant, unquote. But.
Oh, yeah.
It's the same phrase.
Party's use of a proxy private registration service reduces the party's ability to contest a UDRP proceeding.
That's pretty good in my opinion. What do others think? Again, avoiding the word registrant I think is helpful, even though all of us on this call understand what we mean. Is that okay?
A party's use of a proxy / privacy registration service reduces the party's ability to contest the UDRP proceeding.
Sounds
Any
good.
Further discussion on that?
Is domain owner a more precise word than party?
That's not a very good term.
All right.
First, the owner. Yeah, I won't even go down that path. Yeah.
Good enough.
We can get into a whole new debate on that one that we won't do here.
And Steve,
I'm talking about that.
I have a question for you, Steve. Is your theory on this hypothesis number two here? Is your theory that the use of a proxy means that the party might not even know there's a UDRP proceeding?
That's correct.
Registrar fails to relay or reveal like they're supposed to.
Yeah, it either they wouldn't know at all, or they might find out too late or something. So that's the concern.
And then something happens, which you call the default proceeding or something. That's how how the domain owner loses their ability to really, you know, answer the claim. Okay.
Chuck, this is Jane.
Go ahead, Jane.
Might be less than eliminates. Sorry.
To contest a UDRP proceeding, would a more descriptive word there be to respond to a UDRP proceeding?
You okay with that, Steve?
That's okay.
Okay.
Because we're talking about not initiating UDRP, right?
That's right. No, that's a good suggestion.
That's fine.
Okay. Anything else on number two? Okay, Liz, what do we have?
You have a party's use of a proxy / privacy registration service reduces the party's ability to respond to a UDRP proceeding.
Anything further on that? Okay, good work. All right, let's go back to number three, study number three. And Steve Del Bianco, you want to talk about that?
Sure, I have submitted this one, and I suggested in the hypothesis that they fail to reveal that shielded registrant data in accordance with the RAA and potentially in accordance with their own terms of service, although that's of less importance. I had suggested in the study that we get the data two ways. First, by obtaining empirical data that was already collected by the requesting parties and consumer protection agencies. The theory of this was that our consultants would ask consumer protection agencies and those who make requests under the RAA, how many times in the last X months have you made requests, what was the nature of the response that you received. But frankly, I don't have a lot of confidence that that will be easy to gather or statistically robust. So I went on to suggest that more likely we would need to conduct tests. The consultant would need to conduct tests by submitting electronic, properly constructed inquiries and then measuring the time relay or reveal true registrant information to the requester. That would be an audit, if you will, but it's nothing like the audits that Doug Brent and Denise have been planning. I discussed this with them before, and they were intrigued of the idea, but it isn't even in their work plan for the current RAA compliance audit. So keeping in mind that where we're headed with this, because in the study submission we did need to describe the kind of data gathered and the methods, that's where I'm heading with it. And it would be great for that to make its way into whatever we prepare. In other words, the hypothesis alone doesn't sort of indicate the kind of testing we believe will be necessary. So the proposed hypothesis that I have is that some registrars are not revealing registrant data that is shielded by proxy services. When presented with requests that provide reasonable evidence of actionable harm, as required under RAA 3773.
Now, before we discuss it, I suspect that we want to probably treat the word registrant similarly to what we did on the one we just discussed. Is that true?
It might be. I mean, that's a broad implication because this is just Area 6. We have used the word registrant, I believe, in other areas, too.
Yeah. We may have to go back in other areas and look at that. But, again, understanding that the registrant sometimes is the proxy provider or privacy service provider rather than the actual licensee or the one who's subscribing to the proxy service, I suspect that it would be good to handle it the same way we did on the other one. Is that correct?
Well, how would that sound then? Would we substitute the word party for registrant?
No, I don't mean the party one. I think the other one where we talked about the how did we do number one in Metallus, comment. Liz, would you read number
one? Yeah, some registrars operating proxy sites.
No, we didn't. Okay.
Oh.
Go ahead. Never mind.
Privacy services are not revealing data about the actual registrant or subscriber of the proxy / privacy service.
Would that same phrase work there, Steve?
Well, there's two nouns here. There's the registrars that operate stuff and the registrant.
That's fine.
Which of
the
two you want to change here?
It's the registrant, the term registrant that I'm concerned with.
Liz, could you read it one more time with the substitution?
Let me see if it works. Hang on. Some registrars are not revealing the actual registrant or subscriber of the proxy / privacy service that is shielded by proxy services when presented with a request that should be provided, I guess.
I guess that's okay.
Reasonable evidence of actionable harm.
Now, we don't have to do that. I just think that the same situation arises here.
I agree. The word registrant could be ambiguous.
Well, the other way we might think about, I'm sorry, this is Steve, could I get in the queue?
Yeah, go ahead, jump in.
The other way you might think about handling this is just kind of a footnote to our entire document. If we use the word registrant or actual registrant here, we might just drop a footnote saying, in the situation of a proxy or private registration service, we're using this term to mean customer of the service.
And that's probably a lot simpler and cleaner way to do this because the wording gets a little bit lengthy there if every time we use the word registrant we do that. Anybody opposed to that approach? So this might be something either at the end of the table or the beginning of the table because it would not just be for this area.
Sure.
It would be across the whole list of studies.
But we would use this definition of actual registrant or subscriber of the proxy / privacy service rather than saying what you just said, Steve, the customer of the service, right?
Well, I think we had said customer of the proxy / private registration service. But I'm not wedded to customer versus subscriber.
I actually think it's a little clearer to say customer.
Well, then let's go with that. But this way, it's just kind of dropping a footnote or put it as a headnote or something that says when we're talking about in that context, we're using registrant to mean that.
Okay, I'll make a note to do that.
And any objections to handling it that way? A good suggestion. Okay, read one more time what we have on study three, please.
Yeah, some registrars are not revealing data on the. Now we have.
You can just leave it as registrant data, and that's going to be defined.
Okay, registrant data that is shielded by proxy services when presented with requests that provide reasonable evidence of actionable harm as required under RAA 3773.
Now, is it helpful throughout, whenever we use the term registrant, to just put it in single quotes, just to kind of flag it as referring back to that, or does it matter? I don't have strong feelings. Some people don't see little footnotes or something like that, and so... No comments. Okay. fine then. That's it. Any more discussion on study three?
This is Steve DelBianco. I just wanted to lodge the request that we find a way in our final report to include some of the study suggestions that accompanied our submission. In other words, the nature of an audit test, so that we don't just sort of throw this out there without any consideration of the work that went into it.
Well, I've been assuming all along, and this may be a bad assumption, that in terms of anything that the council decides to ask staff to do further work on and getting some cost estimates and so forth, that they would go back to the specific study suggestions. But your point's well taken. Maybe that's another kind of general statement we should make accompanying this.
Right, Chuck, because there's an opportunity that if we actually clarified how it is we are recommending getting the data, that could make something seem much more reasonable and reliable or potentially too expensive, and that would be revealed when we make the decision on which to ask staff to pursue.
Chuck, this is Steve. I'm going to have to drop off.
Hey, thanks. Thanks a lot for all your help, Steve. Steve DelBianco, could you just submit a little sentence or so that accomplishes what you're trying to do that could accompany our report? And again, it applies to all the studies, not just one. Would that be doable?
Yes, and then I'll include by example what I mean on study submission number three.
That'd be fine. That'd be great.
Okay. Because it's a lot of work to go through the individual submissions and try to figure out whether there's nuggets of wisdom in there that could inform the decision.
Okay. Good.
Liz knows that, right, Liz?
Yeah, I was just thinking that, Steve, and I do understand the value of it because there's some very thoughtful rationale for the approach on a number of these studies that otherwise the council will, potentially neglect.
Yeah, the way you said it, the key rationale was how would the results of such a study inform ICANN policymaking? I mean, that is, after all, the key now question, and most of us actually tried to answer that carefully in our submissions, and that isn't being discussed at all.
Okay. If there's nothing else on that, let's jump ahead to number 20, and that was proposed by Claudio from ENTA. Steve, you want to talk about that one?
If I had to summarize Claudio's submission, it was this. Proxy services are not timely or reliable as conduits of communication to registrants. He went on to suggest he thinks proxy services could be in breach of RA 3773, which is somewhat like the point I made. But the way he was getting at is that untimely and unreliable conduits of communication. And by that, I'm thinking of the relay function more than the reveal function, if you understand my point. The relay being the proxy relaying the information to the party who's truly the owner of the domain. So the previous hypothesis that Liz had put down was that law enforcement agencies' ability to fight crime is significantly hampered when privacy services are used. And while I think that's what Claudio is suggesting, I really believe when you read his submission, he suggests two hypotheses. Number one, that some proxy services do not reliably relay information requests to and from the actual registrant. And then second, he suggests that some proxy services are failing to adhere to RAA 3773. And that is probably duplicative of what I put in on study submission number three.
Should they be combined?
Meaning his number two with my number three?
Yeah.
Probably.
That probably makes it easier for the council to deal with this. Now, for maybe we just on number two for 20, we just refer to study three.
I definitely would agree with that. Point to the duplication. So we'll capture the fact that it was part of Claudio's two-part hypothesis, but refer to study submission number three for consolidate. Consolidate with study submission number three. But
okay.
The first one would stand alone.
Yeah.
which is trying to test whether they're reliably relaying the information. Now, Steve Metalis brought up this relay and in part of a UDRP proceeding. This is broader than that. I don't think Claudio is just saying in a UDRP, are they relaying so that the party can contest a UDRP.
Yeah.
It's just in general, are they relaying?
Yep.
And it's a two-way relay, both relaying to the domain owner and back to the requester.
So what do we have then? So we would leave any modifications to what Steve's proposed here, in addition to the one, the reference back to study three on number two. Everybody's okay with that? So what do we? So Liz, what do we have here then for 20?
We have one, and I think I might change these numbers to letters.
To be consistent, that's
good.
To
be consistent, but one, some proxy services do not reliably relay information requests to and from actual registrants. And number two, some proxy services are failing to adhere to the RAA, consolidated with study suggestion number three.
Okay, any additional comments on that? All right, then as our last item, let's go to study 12.
Chuck, this is Jim. I'm sorry, I was a little slow on the mute button here.
Okay, go ahead, Jim.
Just consideration, I'd ask Steve if he would be okay with including promptly and reliably relay information.
Absolutely. Untimely. Claudio used the word untimely in his, and that's a great catch. Thank you.
Good, thanks, Jim. You got that, Liz?
Yes, I do.
Good. Okay, anybody else on 20? Okay, on 12 then, Steve. Go ahead.
Thank you. 12 was submitted by Wu Sinatri. I probably butchered that pronunciation, sorry. He's with the Telecom Authority in the Netherlands. And if I had to summarize the submission, it looked like this. He'd like some assessment and comparison of the needs for WHOIS from both the law enforcement and the privacy perspective. So it was a thoughtful but very general question. And it really didn't contain a hypothesis. So I have taken a stab at one that tries to get to this balance that he's after, because he did put some thoughtful statement in there about balance. Here's one way to restate a hypothesis. Registrations can become more accurate if sensitive information of private persons can be secured while giving law enforcement proportional access. Let me read that one more time. Registrations can become more accurate if sensitive information of private persons can be secured while giving law enforcement proportional access. His implication is that people would not put in Mickey Mouse if they knew that, as a natural person, that only law enforcement had proportional access and they wouldn't mind putting accurate information in. I think it's basically an argument for changing WHOIS so that only certain parties can get at it, and that would improve accuracy.
Steve, I have one question for you. What do you mean by proportional access?
That is a phrase that Wilt used in his submission. And let me see if I can... Yeah, that's his word, proportional access. And I believe he would be saying that it's proportional in the sense that law enforcement has a need to get it. So they have a proportionate need to get at the data, whereas other and general public might not. And therefore, there's this balancing or this scale that access is only given to those whose proportionate need balances the privacy needs of the individual.
I really have trouble with the use of the term proportionate or proportional there. Maybe that's my mathematical background, but which can be a problem sometimes.
It's a word he used, but I think we could take some liberty here and just strike proportional, and I think the draft.
Yeah, that's what I was thinking.
Okay.
Just say law enforcement access?
That's correct.
Anybody have a problem with that? How about on this particular hypothesis then, as presented, deleting the word proportional? Any more comments on that?
This is Steve. I would change what I put for registrations can become more accurate. I'd probably say would. If we're asking somebody to test it, we're going to test the assertion that they would become more accurate.
I can hear Paul Sahura commenting on that right now. Future.
Exactly.
So,
and I hope that the submitter, that Mr. Dinatris would weigh into.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Liz, what do you have on that one?
Registrations would become more accurate if the sensitive information of private persons can be secured while giving law enforcement access.
Yeah, he expressly does not include IP owners, and he expressly only speaks to private persons, so I wanted to be sure to capture those two concepts.
Okay. All right. Very good. Anything else on that?
I had one other thing on Area 6.
Go ahead.
I included the footnote, which was the RAA 3773, and would encourage that to be included in our the bottom of our table on the wiki or someplace else, because since we refer to it several times, it ought to be easy for the reader to find.
You get that, Liz?
Yes.
I pasted the link to it in the bottom of my Word doc.
Thanks, Steve.
Very good. All right. Well, we made it through two more areas, which leaves just two to go. And James has already submitted some proposed hypotheses, and he also, in his document, included the provided hypotheses, which are pasted into the table. Sorry about that. I have a second line that if I mute myself, I can't talk. So I think we're done for today. Our meeting will be same time next week, and I would hope that we can finish areas 7 and 8 next week. 8 being a little bit tough because it's the GAC hypotheses, and hopefully by the end of the meeting next week, be ready to send out what we've done to the proposers and give them about a week to respond. Maybe before our meeting after that, so that we can see if we make any adjustments. Does that make sense? Okay, good work, guys. We'll remember to respond during the week on the list if you have thoughts. And I don't think we have any special action items other than I will do a quick meeting recap for those that are not on the call, especially, or those that had to leave early. And I will... and then Liz will, prepare the red line, and then also enter the what we decided today in the wiki. Any questions or comments?
Yeah, well, only one. I think you indicate that James has volunteered graciously to do Area 7.
He already did.
Great. That's right. That's right. I think to see that. And
Eric Bruner Williams submitted some proposed hypotheses for the GAC, the four GAC studies that we haven't covered. Some of them actually may have been covered, like one, but we'll deal with that.
Great.
So I just pasted Eric Bruner Williams, who has a conflict with a core meeting every time we meet. So what I did is I just posted his proposed hypotheses for GAC 1, 5, 6, and 3 in Area 8, and so we'll just use that as a starting off point in that area next week, if that's okay.
Fantastic.
Okay. All right, and feel free to take a look at those, both what James submitted and what Eric Bruner Williams. That'll probably facilitate what we're doing next week.
And they'll be in my Word document also.
Excellent. Thank you very much, everyone. Talk to you next week and on the list. Okay. Meeting adjourned.
Thanks, Chuck.
Bye.
Bye.
Bye.